Hey, this is Heath Padgett.
Welcome to the
RV
Entrepreneur Podcast.
Woo, I love it.
Hey, this is Heath Padgett, and welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast, episode 170. Today's episode was recorded live from our third annual RV Entrepreneur Summit. It's crazy that we've hosted three of those now, that we hosted at Lake Guntersville State Park last month. One thing that's been cool about hosting our conference has been interacting with people and companies who are truly working on amazing things in the RV industry. This really cool space that encourages people to get outside and go on adventures. And one effort that I've been able to learn a bit more about over the past couple of years and be semi-involved in just through some marketing videos that we've done has been the push by a small team inside of Winnebago to create a movement of accessibility enhanced vehicles, essentially open up the RV life for people with disabilities who may not otherwise be able to travel. And while Winnebago has done custom modifications to RVs for many years by adding things like wheelchair ramps, this team is actually working to manufacture AE vehicles in bulk so that you could drive up to any lot across the country and buy one, making adventures accessible to everybody. And during the RVE Summit, I sat down with Jamie Sorensen, who runs the advanced technology team, who's been working specifically on this project. Kind of the main theme of today's episode is around market validation, essentially how the team at Winnebago went about validating that there was a bigger market of people who were interested in buying accessibility-enhanced vehicles. But on a personal note, I love this conversation with Jamie because this is an amazing mission that they're working on, helping people who otherwise wouldn't be able to go on adventures, go stay in national parks and RVs and things like that, to be thoughtful of that community of travelers who may have previously thought, I can't go travel like this in this format because I couldn't afford, you know, to create some type of custom vehicle to basically make adventures accessible for everybody. So I'm really, really excited for you guys to hear this conversation with Jamie. Before diving into our conversation, I just want to take a minute and thank today's sponsor, Better For Your Mugs. Better For Your was started by a couple of friends from our RVE Summit named Jason and Rose, who are an amazing couple of entrepreneurs from Australia. Their Better For Your coffee mugs are double-walled stainless steel and seriously the best coffee cup I've ever had. They brought them to our 2018 summit last year, and even though we had limited space when we were going to New Zealand, they are one of the few possessions that we hauled over there with us last year on our camper van trip and then all the way across Canada because we didn't want to be without them. They are virtually unbreakable, come in an eco-friendly box, and are amazing quality if you're looking for the perfect mug to take on an adventure or just use every day at home. Learn more at betterforyour.com. All right, let's get into today's episode with Jamie Sorensen.
Welcome to the afternoon session with Jamie and also the first ever live podcast recording for the RV Entrepreneur. So thank you guys so much for being here. I'm stoked to dig into a couple different things with Jamie around his division of Winnebago, which has kind of been operating as their own little entity for a while now under Specialty Vehicles. By the way, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks. But first, I wanted to show you guys a little video to kind of kick off this workshop and show you one of the projects that they have been working on over the past couple of years.
Winnebago Industries has got a long history of product innovation, listening to the customer, and providing what the customer is actually looking for in a motor coach. With our Accessibility Enhanced product line, what we've done is we've taken 30 years of customizing vehicles and we've turned that into a product line.
I like the opportunity that Winnebago started thinking about people that are handicapped and need those accessible RVs because it gives us the opportunity to have more options to do road trips and definitely, you know, be independent.
In the time we've spent in the Winnebago RV, we've been very impressed with the space.
To have a company like Winnebago with its history and quality look out for people in wheelchairs and the disabled, it's really nice. I can lift my wheelchair up. It has a handicap accessible shower, a handicap accessible toilet. It makes it a lot easier.
I was a little skeptical, and this was far more
than what I expected. It's going to open up, you know, avenues for many people, you know, that had a desire to participate in seeing the wonderful natural resources of this country. You know, I just think it's great. It's so nice, you know, to be able to get up to a dinner table.
Sometimes when you think, oh, it's going to be handicap accessible, it's not going to be like the best looking. It's very beautiful. It's a nice looking RV.
And then when that door opened up and there was a lift there, it was really just kind of like, holy cow, this is real. This really is available for people like me and my family. It's very spacious. Something my wife and I noticed was, you know, that we both could walk down the aisle together.
The ramp just folds right up into the wall. It doesn't take away from your experience inside.
I don't like people to know that I'm always in a wheelchair. So I like things that are kind of discreet. I like that it's not noticeable.
They've made it feel like home.
Yeah. Winnebago coming out with this just really blown me away. It really has.
Since the injury, Griffin has had so much to adapt to, so many life changes. He is one of the most resilient people I've ever met.
I feel pretty blessed to be given the second chance that I have. You really think about having a disability, what it truly means is you have to work harder to get the same result as another person. Companies like Winnebago and they make things easier for wheelchair users. It's a really nice step in the right direction.
At Winnebago, our mission is to give people great experiences in the outdoors. This is one way that we can provide that experience to a demographic of people who don't normally get to have these experiences. That's really cool. It gives me goosebumps every time I see that.
That's awesome, right? I mean, you guys have been making these specialty vehicles division has been around for 40 years. You guys have made over 4,000 units for people. Yep. And so I wanted to kick off today's conversation around, to start off with the AE, accessibility enhanced vehicles, because you guys have basically been making these custom order for a long time to people, right? So
right,
like people
yeah.
come to you guys and they say, I need this, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the way the process would work before with us, the customer would either come to the dealership or contact Winnebago directly, and then we would work with them on an individual basis to figure out exactly what levels of ability they have inside the vehicle, what types of things they need to have to increase their experience as far as mobility inside the vehicle, and then we would custom build that vehicle to that person. And we've been doing that for, you know, like you said, decades. What we tried to do when we got the accessibility enhanced product line brought over into specialty vehicles, which before 2018 it was in a different division of Winnebago. We brought it into the specialty vehicle division, and then that's when we started asking questions about, you know, because we've got this great person who does our sales for us, Sonia Kobringer. And we would ask Sonia, okay, if we had to build a coach that could be on a dealer's lot so that somebody could go look, touch, see, feel it, you know, experience what it's like, what features do we need to build into that coach? And she started rattling off this and that. And she'd follow that up with, but it's not going to be perfect for everyone. But what we quickly figured out from Sonia is we've got 40 years of knowledge based on what we've done in the past, and we've got 25 years of voice of customer inside Sonia's head.
Yeah.
So we just needed to go and kind of dig that out. And what we found was we were making a product that we launched at Tampa at the Super Show back in January that covered about 90% of everyone's needs, and we could put it on a dealer's lot so they could have that buying experience that we all take for granted when we go to an RV dealer.
Yeah. And, I met Sonia like a year and a half ago in San Diego, and she's been with the company how long? 25 years?
26.
Okay. And like she could rattle off almost every single family that she had ever worked with who had come in, because I presume that's a process. Like when you're building out this custom unit, for people who are coming into, to the shop, right? It takes time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was when we were doing a custom vehicle, it was a 6 to 12 month process, depending on what level of customization we were doing. And she was working intimately with these people, you know, for almost a year of their life. And then for her to actually hand that baby off, that was kind of her pride and joy. So yeah, she knows everybody on a personal level.
I was wondering, like, to look at the market of this, because not everyone here is running a billion-dollar business like Winnebago. And so just thinking about around how do you validate the market for something like handicap accessible vehicles and specialty vehicles as a whole, because you guys have been doing this for customers so long, how do you basically make a big bet and say, we're going to put a lot of resources and time into making these vehicles to go put them out there on the lot, not knowing if like they're going to sell as much as you wanted to, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we look into the past and then we try and look into the future. And when looking into the past, you know, we looked at what we were doing on an annual basis as far as volume of these custom vehicles. And then we kind of picked apart, you know, what opportunities were we missing? And what we found is we were missing a lot of opportunities with people who didn't have 6 or 12 months, to wait for that vehicle to be customized and delivered to them. They might only have a few months to go. A good case in point, we recently delivered, an Intent accessibility enhanced unit to an RV dealer in Minnesota for their rental fleet. And they were approached 2 weeks ago, by a person who was just diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. They rented that thing for, I believe, 4 weeks, and they're on the road right now checking off all the bucket list items that they could possibly get within that amount of time. That would be a compelling story for why we need to have these vehicles available now.
Yeah. That's crazy. I remember just the couple that we met when we were hanging out in San Diego. It was like a very similar story. That to me is like one of the saddest stories of one of my biggest fears for that pushed us in RVing, and it sounds a little... It sounds bad, but it's like we've had conversations with people who were a little bit older. And I remember one couple specifically who had emailed us, and she basically said she bought an RV. They had been waiting for retirement and they were so excited. And then like the husband was filling it up and had a heart attack and passed away before they could even go on it. And it sounds terrible. And it's not like a exciting thing that we normally share, but it is a part of it. And to be able to like help people who are either maybe sick or earlier on in their life who didn't think they could go on that adventures is really cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Stephen and Rebecca Rosenbaum that you're talking to that we met in San Diego a year ago. Yeah. And it was just a fluke. We were having our Winnebago dealer conference in San Diego, and Rebecca had contacted our factory back in Forest City, Iowa, that they were interested in an accessibility enhanced vehicle. And they just happened to be in San Diego. They were San Diego natives. So they were literally within about 45 minutes of where we were at showing a vehicle. And we had them come in, showed them the vehicle. Wes and the Armosa Studios crew was there. You were there. We were all, you know, all, everybody was on the verge of tears hearing Steven's story about how he had this incredibly active life, you know, hiking all over the place, traveling the world. And then he was diagnosed with stage 4. It was a skin cancer that basically started taking over his body. And he went from full mobility to wheelchair ridden within about 4 months. And unfortunately, we lost Stephen in June of last year. So, you know, from the time that we met him, he only had about 3 months to live.
Yeah. When it comes to people who are in wheelchairs, and some of the people you have worked with, like, I'm just out of curiosity because I don't know, or I haven't thought about as much, like, if we're not in that space, once they get in a rig, are a lot of campgrounds actually like handicap friendly? It's not something I've really looked at too much and things like that. Like the places that people are going, like, is that a problem? Like after they actually buy these vehicles?
It can be. Yeah. I think one of the things that we're seeing is there's a definite push at the national park level to be ADA compliant, which ADA compliancy is difficult for some of these campgrounds because it does come with some added expense. But that's one of the things that I've noticed when I'm out and about in an RV and being able to travel and stay in an RV park is, you know, what could somebody that has a disability or has a mobility challenge, what can they do and what can't they do here? And I'm surprised at the level of accessibility that there is once you start looking for it.
What are some of the biggest concerns that people have before they're like, while they're in the RV buying process? Cause like we have all of our concerns, like before we buy an RV, but for somebody who's coming in with some kind of disability, like and I know it's going to be different for each situation, but what are some of the things that are pretty common that specifically when they're looking at buying an RV that they're worried about from y'all's conversation?
Gosh, actually it really goes back to the exact same focuses that we have, that you would have when you're shopping for an RV. Is there enough storage? Are the things located in the places where I'd like them to be located? Does it have all the features and amenities that I would expect from an RV? And then, you know, to build on top of that, then it comes into how that person would transfer in and out of a chair, whether it's a power chair or a wheelchair. You know, are the grab points going to be in the right location? Do we need to add a grab bar here, add a grab bar there? That's one of the processes that we go through when we design these vehicles, is to make sure that there's additional structure in the walls so that we can add grab rails at various places. Because when you think about somebody transferring, and I don't want to get too graphic, but transferring from their chair to the commode, they might need to have that grab rail 4 inches higher than the next person, and we try and accommodate that and put structure in there so that we can locate that. So there's a little bit of customizing.
And making sure that the wall's not going to come off.
Exactly.
Like they're putting all their weight on it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's got to hold up to that.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I'm going to go back to some of my things. So as you guys have been going back to some of the process for like bringing these products to life, so you kind of tapped into Sonia. She's been working like one-on-one basis with a lot of these customers for like 25 years.
Right.
And so at some point a couple of years ago, you decide, okay, there's enough of a market out there that we want to tap into them, start putting these on dealers' lots so people don't have to wait. So what's been the process that you guys have went through over the past couple of years, like to actually start bringing these products to life? Because I presume it's like one thing to say like, let's start making these, but what are some of those next steps? I'm just curious because like y'all are operating in this big company, but I'm sure there's a lot of things that we can take away too, as you know.
Yeah. So when you look at it in terms of a big company, one of the nice things about its specialty vehicle division is we operate at the same level as the RV side, Grand Design, Towables, Chris-Craft, and specialty vehicles. So we're on a kind of a level playing field. We're just a very, very small company, which makes us very agile. So we can do things very quickly. So the process that we took to actually get to this stage was probably about a year. It really didn't take us too long. We identified the need in the market. We did some research. We partnered with a company called Mobility Works on some research. And Mobility Works, if you're not familiar with them, they're the nation's largest manufacturer of wheelchair accessible vans. So we used some research with those guys.
What did like those numbers look like for the market size of people who might be interested?
Yeah, so the market size that we're looking at, that we identified, you know, there's 11 million people that are in wheelchairs or have a disability that precludes them from being ambulatory is how I would describe it. And then out of that, then you start starting to figure down, you know, just kind of that general statistical figure of how you determine a market size. And you know, I can't get into too many numbers here, but yeah, there's a sizable market there. And definitely from the demand that we've seen at Winnebago through unmet needs that we've had and through the successes that we've had, we definitely see this as a potential market. And then you start looking at some of the modern stuff that we see permeating the rest of the consumer industry. I mean, Mattel released a Barbie that comes now with a wheelchair. Tommy Hilfiger recently launched a line of clothing for adaptive uses. So it's got side zippers, it's got magnetic closures on the shirt, stuff like that. So it's just becoming a little bit more mainstream of recognizing that there's a group of people out there who are not getting their needs met.
Yeah, because I'm sure, I know that just from hearing things here and there online, I was talking to somebody at a like Escapers rally a few months ago, talking about y'all's division, because I think it's awesome what y'all are doing. And she was losing her ability to walk and was saying she actually has Winnebago now, and she had no idea like what you guys were even working on. So how, like, now that y'all actually have a few units out, y'all took them to Tampa, they sold, congrats, by the way. How are y'all actually going to start like getting, how many people in here, by the way, knew that Winnebago made like vehicles like this for? How are you going to get like the rest of everyone to know outside of like this conversation?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, just pushing that envelope on marketing, making sure that people are aware that we're doing it, events like this. The events that we did around Tampa, we did a lot of press, a lot of media around RVX, which is the big RV show last week out in Salt Lake City, and just keep pushing that and pushing that and pushing that until we can, you know, finally get enough traction within that segment to generate the knowledge that, hey, when I think about traveling in an RV, I can go to a Winnebago dealer and find something that'll work for me.
Is the price point for these rigs going to be a lot different than like if I were to buy a regular intent? I don't know. What is it, like 130-ish off? I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah. So I'll be right up front. So the incremental cost for us to do the modifications needed, which we do some of those in regular production and some of those in our shop, the incremental cost is about $80,000 on all three vehicles. So we've got the entry level, the intent, The midline, which would be the Adventurer, the both of those are Class A gas, and then the Forza, which is a diesel pusher. And the incremental cost is pretty much the same because we're doing the same things to all three vehicles.
Gotcha. Just out of curiosity for you guys that are here, does anybody have any like family members who have a disability and have talked about like travel? Just out of curiosity. Tim? Yeah, Jed, would you mind getting a mic out to Tim? I'd just be curious to kind of hear like, you know, what are some of the things that people that would be helpful for them to know about?
Yeah, my stepfather's in a wheelchair and has been in one for quite a while. One of the biggest problems, and I've actually done an inspection on a wheelchair accessible unit once. And one of his biggest problems is if he wants to drive, which he does now with hand controls and such, what challenges how are you looking at, or fixes are you looking at for, say, having a slide and being able to have somebody drive it themselves and having a chair rotate and allow them to get in and out?
Yeah, that's a great instance. So we actually look at that pretty closely. So when we chose the three floor plans that we have for the Intent, the Adventure, and the Forza, this basically goes back to Sonia's knowledge base. So what she does is she reviews all the floor plans that our product planners come up with every year, and she determines, you know, which ones are going to work for a chair just because of her vast experience doing so. So if you look at those three floor plans, they're made so that you can get to the front of the cab area without having to extend a slide room. With respect to the driver position or the passenger position, there's a couple of different options that we can do, and we can do those post-delivery, which is either take out the seat pedestal, put in a chair lock if they want to be in their chair in the passenger position, or if they want to have full driving controls and use hand controls, then we partner with a third party to install those driving controls. But yeah, we can accommodate all different levels of mobility.
Would it ever be an option for people who are not in a wheelchair yet, but they have difficulty with stairs, to create a much smaller version of that that's just you step on, it would come up, and you would step off onto the floor and assist to just get into the vehicle? There is a lot of people that struggle with the three or four steps to get into.
Right. Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. So one of the vehicles that we sold at the Tampa show was one of our Forzas, and that was exactly the case. It was a husband and wife, and for the life of me, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she had a challenge with stairs. She's not permanently in a wheelchair, but she uses a chair occasionally. She uses a walker, and that was a perfect situation for her. And I see what you're saying with a smaller area just for a single person. Or for a single person lift. There is a product out there, an aftermarket product. I believe it's called a Pig. It's got a horrible name. But it basically fits in your staircase entry, and it lifts you up to floor level. But that's like a third-party device that would be added on to a normal coach. So
it would be awesome if you could just have that as an option for someone to order.
Yeah, we've made installations of those before. So it is available. It's just it's a matter of educating, you know, the customer base that these types of applications are available at your local dealer. But that might be a situation where you might not find a vehicle that has that pre-installed at the dealer level, but, you know, definitely something that we'd want to take a look at.
First, let me second the idea of the option on the stairs, because you're not my friend either.
Sorry.
A lot of folks. But I have a friend who has to have basically has to have connectivity. It's the help, I've fallen, I can't get up type system.
Right.
What have you looked at anything to support connectivity, automatic hookups to whatever local Wi-Fi there might be, or something like this, so that when you pull into a campground, especially he likes to travel by himself, and, you know, what sort of ideas are you looking in that direction at all? So for people who need that kind of ability to call for help is what I'm saying.
Right. So I don't know of any specific products that would address the need that would help locate that person. If they were, you know, out on the road somewhere, or maybe at a rest stop, and have a situation. But that kind of is a little bit of a segue into our specialty vehicles division, where we do a lot of custom commercial vehicles that have really robust Wi-Fi systems in there. So to marry those two would not be an issue. The issue would be trying to figure out what third-party provider of the, like the Life Alert button, yeah, would identify where that person is geographically. That would be the challenge.
Yeah, you mostly would like to be within the, say, 100 feet of the camp of the device of the camp, you know, in a campground.
Right. Yeah. Yep. We've got the capability to put the hardware together, but yeah, it would be that geographical where's Waldo type of situation.
You guys kind of have like this blank canvas, and I have a lot of fun talking with you and Ashish, who Ashish is the head of strategy for Winnebago, and he's head up the acquisition of Chriscraft and also of Grand Design, and just really, he's a really smart guy.
Yes.
You are too, Jamie. because y'all kind of have this blank canvas. So under specialty vehicles, it's interesting because y'all have AE vehicles, which are handicap accessible units. And then under that, there's also, we're going to chat about them in a minute, basically just like all these different types of use cases. And there's this entire market for people to have to convert shells of RVs and turn them into like mobile dentistry units, healthcare things, and we're going to get into that in a minute. And then also another layer under that is you guys partnered with Motive to release an all-electric chassis that we can kind of talk about.
Right.
So you guys are kind of like this little innovative hub, and you kind of get to do your own thing inside of Winnebago, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't think most people know like what you guys are, what you're working on.
We're kind of like the Skunk Works of Winnebago. So we do all kinds of strange projects. So when you think about like the Travatos that we came out with the Pure 3 system, the lithium system, that was actually started a little bit in our shop. So the first deployments of that Volta power systems were actually in Ford Transits that we did for some commercial applications out on the East Coast.
If people don't know what any of that meant. So
basically you're replacing the generator with a giant lithium battery. And that lithium battery is recharged by a secondary alternator on the engine or by shore power. So it's very unique. It makes for a very simple user experience because you don't have the complexity of that generator anymore.
Yeah, and most people don't like running noisy generators and things like that.
Right, yeah. You know, I go back to the conversation this morning, and Eric Oakley was having difficulty with his generator.
Well, he didn't know
for a long
time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's one of those things that, you know, we're helping to eliminate with this this move towards a lithium system or a stored energy system in place of a generator. Just reduce the complexity. You push the button and it's on.
Yeah.
So the Navion that I'm sharing this week with my family is parked outside, and it's just sitting there doing its thing, running off of a battery. So yeah,
that's awesome. Before we move on from the AE vehicles, does anyone have any more questions specific to the handy? Yeah.
Sort of related to handicap, but just in general usage, I guess, as a vertically challenged person, I find, and this would go for handicap, this is what made me think of
Preach.
It. Reaching anything. I mean, the microwaves are totally unsafe for me in most units because they're about 4 feet above my head. Mm-hmm. I can't see them. I can't reach. And I've just looked and noticed that it's like, how hard would it be to redesign it in some way to put it in the smaller cabinet down here? I mean, I still might not be able to get into the cupboard, but at least I'm going to put something up there I'm not going to reach on a regular basis.
Right.
And I find that most manufacturers have can keep putting them higher and higher. And I'm just more sort of from a product development standpoint, requesting that you reconsider that and start putting them back at a lower, safer level for those of us who are under 5 feet tall and, you know, can't get up there.
Right. So I think what you may have noticed within the last couple of years or so is a huge push for voice of customer from our Winnebago user base. And we started that 2 years ago. This will be our third year doing a project at our Grand National Rally that we host every year in Forest City at the mothership, where we're addressing those types of issues. You know, we've got a big push into human-centered design at Winnebago, making sure that we're looking at things from a customer's perspective instead of an engineering perspective. And that's the way, you know, you're exactly right. You look at a lot of RVs across the industry, and they're definitely designed to make something fit in a space, not necessarily designed to be used. Yeah, nope, I agree with you.
Awesome. Well, we're going to watch another quick little video to show another one of y'all's projects that y'all have been working on.
The comforts of a clinical setting are now available in a mobile application.
We're taking a very common imaging modality. We're bringing it to a segment of the population that either physically or psychologically can't access it.
Typically, 50% of individuals who are diagnosed with lung cancer live less than 1 year. And the reason for that is because when lung cancer is detected, it's typically in stage 4. And that is why early detection of lung cancer is so critical.
Before, we would have to have shore power, meaning the vehicle would have to be located in a place we could plug it in. And that really starts to limit where you can go, right? Without reliable power, the system can't run. If the system can't run, it can't do its job, which is to take images and provide those diagnoses.
The Volta Power System provides all the power that the clinic needs to operate, and it provides clean power all day long. There's no noise, no vibration, nothing that would give them the discomfort of a noisy diesel generator operating in the background.
With the advanced power on board the Winnebago now, we can set up anywhere we want. Wherever this needs to go, wherever it'll attract, wherever it'll get the greatest access is where it can go. That's the beauty of it.
To bring screening in through a mobile vehicle like this is really very innovative. It's really one of the first of its kind.
Through the continuous innovation that we do at Winnebago, we're able to provide the underserved communities that need outreach.
The look and feel of the Winnebago vehicle, it's very familiar to people. It's very comforting. It's very home-like. The folks that are coming in to get these scans are already have an elevated anticipation level, right? Already a little bit nervous about it. For them to walk into a Winnebago, to walk into a home-like environment and get that scan is very comforting for them.
That's really going to help make a difference. It's really going to be a game changer in helping us reach more individuals that are at high risk for lung cancer, being able to detect lung cancer and making sure that they get treatment at the earliest stage possible.
There are so many cool things that we get to be involved with at Specialty Vehicles. This is another project that's taken, oh gosh. I met with the guys from Neurologica in November of 2017, and we formed a partnership with Samsung Neurologica. So Neurologica was a business that created CT scanners. And they were purchased by Samsung in 2014, so they became a subsidiary of Samsung. The unique value proposition of the Samsung CT scanner is that that CT scanner has its own battery system on board. So it's able to do a CT scan from the onboard battery, and then I can get into all kinds of crazy technical details about it, which will bore you to death. But the gantry actually translates, the bed doesn't translate. There's just so many things about it that make it perfect for an application in our commercial vehicles. And I got all excited about this with the guys from Neurologica, and they just said, I don't know what you're talking about. We don't want to do this, blah, 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 blah. And then about 3 months later, they had a customer come to them and say, hey, could you put that in a Winnebago? Because they had a Winnebago mammography unit. And Neurologica said, we've already talked to Winnebago. We know all about this. So a long story short, we came full circle in a very quick fashion with Neurologica. We formed a partnership with them to create this vehicle with them, which is a mobile lung screening unit for early detection of lung cancer. On a whim, we contacted the American Lung Association, and we left a message. 30 seconds later, they picked up the phone and called us back, and they said, what are you doing? This is fascinating, and we got the American Lung Association to jump on board with us. And I can get into the business strategy end of this, but if you're familiar with the progression of mammography about 15, 20 years ago when the FDA cleared...
Sorry, what was that word?
Mammography.
What is that?
Breast exam. So, an X-ray breast exam. So to detect detect breast cancer. Sorry, it's... In front of a group of people, I'm a little bit nervous talking about that kind of stuff. But it's a real thing. You know, breast cancer is definitely a huge issue in society. So about 15, 20 years ago, the FDA cleared mammograms for reimbursement through Medicare and Medicaid. And basically when that happens, that's kind of the tipping point for it becoming a viable market, because hospitals, you know, the medical industry, they like to see some profit along with what they're doing. In 2016, the FDA cleared low-dose CT scanners for early detection of lung cancer. So it was kind of that this is going to be the next form of the next wave of technology into radiology. With Samsung's equipment and our vehicle, it just seemed like a natural fit, and we got early in on the on riding the wave on this one. So,
and as part of the idea with this is that you guys are able to take it to rural communities where they don't have access and they couldn't just go to a hospital.
Exactly. So when you think about a person who thinks they might have lung cancer, that's going to be a person who's got a long history of smoking, and you get into the tobacco belt, which isn't too far from here, and you've actually got people who have, you know, they've been smoking since age 5. Because that was just their, you know, that was common in their society. So you've got people with long histories of smoking, and they don't want the stigma of going to a clinic or a hospital, because they know that they're going to be told something, you know, they know they're going to get told that, you know, number one, quit smoking, and number two, they're going to have a little bit of shame. But if we can package this in a mobile situation and put it in a grocery store parking lot, it's a lot less intimidating. It's a lot more inviting. We can get people in, scan them, get them into a treatment program, and hopefully have a successful outcome.
Yeah, I was talking with Ashish the other day, and I knew you guys had made this vehicle, and it's like I've been to Walmarts before where they have like the blood banks and the old school buses and things like that. And I kind of, you know, obviously people wrap RVs and go out and do things. I never thought he was talking about how he was like, we should put together like a summit for this type of entrepreneur. It's a totally different market, right? Where people are making mobile dentistries and mobile lung units and things like that. But he was just talking about how massive the market was for something like this. Like,
it is. Yeah.
Cause I kind of in my head think of them as like one-off, almost like promotional things, like where people are more or less just trying to put their branding out there, not realizing that there's actually a real need for these to be dispersed across the country.
Yeah. There's a huge need for these types of vehicles. You know, it's, you know, I mean, the facts and the video kind of support themselves. It's a huge need. And we're trying to fill it.
Yeah. Are you seeing any, like, do you guys ever have any like small business entrepreneurs, not just like big hospitals and big companies who come to you guys for builds like this? Or like, is anyone actually like picking up a big Winnebago shell, you know, converting it to be their main business hub, whether that's a dentist or something like that, and kind of going across the country and kind of building a business and brand? I'm just kind of curious.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll give you like a 30-second history or a 30-second how we do business for our commercial vehicles. So we work with a network of upfitters across the country, and the upfitters would take one of our shell vehicles, which you saw in the video, and they would do some of the interior upfit of the vehicle, install the medical equipment. Installing medical equipment isn't in Winnebago's wheelhouse, but creating vehicles in a production environment is. So we'll team up with an outside partner sometimes, depending on either geographic location or maybe they're a specialty provider for mobile imaging, or maybe they're really good at mobile dentistry, maybe they're good at ophthalmology, maybe they're really good at bookmobiles. So we'll partner with these.
Like a podcast mobile?
Absolutely.
Be pretty cool. I'd do that.
Don't you have a podcast mobile?
No, not anymore. We sold it.
No. So. Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't know that. All right. Let me write
that
one down.
That's why we need to get this mobile going. Yeah. Mobile podcast, you know, that'd be awesome. Anyway, yeah. Keep going.
All right. Yeah. So anyhow, so we operate through a network of upfitters. We get back to your question of a good use case that's kind of outside, kind of a private entrepreneur relationship. So there's a gentleman, Dr. William Burnell. He operates a mobile clinic out of St. Cloud, Minnesota called Doorstep DOT. And what he does is he goes to trucking companies. So think J.B. Hunt or another large trucking company in the upper Midwest, Norseman Trucking, anyhow. He'll go to the trucking company and he'll do DOT physicals on site at the trucking company. So he'll run 20, 30 guys through a day, come back the next day, run another 20, 30 drivers through, do their every 2 year DOT physical, and then he'll move on to the next trucking site. And he's in the process of specifying out a second vehicle because he's growing his business.
Yeah. That's awesome. Whole industry I had no idea about.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing I want to get into in our conversation today is you guys have been really working hard on the partnering with Motive. What's the name of the full company?
Motive Power Systems.
And you guys built an all-electric unit on top of that.
Right.
So I want to just watch a super quick video, and then I'm sure people are going to have some questions around what you're working on.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think I've been really busy in the last year.
tell me more about the whole. I mean, because we've had lots of conversations in the past, like, oh, it'd be sweet for an all electric RV. The real dream would be an all electric RV that has, you know, the self driving, because then life would just be incredible. You could just drive around and get plugged up and
exactly.
do your thing.
Exactly.
So that's like coming out next year.
We'll see.
So I want to open it up for questions here in a minute around the all-electric unit that you guys rolled out, because I know it's in use. I know range is still limited, but mm-hmm. y'all are working hard on pushing that, and that's awesome. So could you give some like a little bit of backstory for what exactly that rig is and what it consists of?
Yeah, so a little bit of history on how we got to where we're at today with electric vehicles. So I met a guy named John Knutson. John Knutson was a local Forest City guy back in, he would have worked at Winnebago back in like the late 70s. He went on to do different things in his career. He wasn't with Winnebago for very long, but he stayed in contact because he has family in the area. Flash forward to 2014 when I came on board at Winnebago, and I was part of the I was brought on to take care of our transit bus division, which our transit bus division at the time wasn't doing very well. We sold that business unit off, but we kept specialty vehicles kind of as a viable business. But through that bus relationship, I met John Knutson at a bus conference, and he showed me a chassis that they electrified for transit bus use. And it was pretty cool. And I told John, I said, yeah, it's really neat. I like it. If I can figure out a project or a use case, I'll come back. And 2 years later, I was at the American Association of Blood Banks conference, which is basically the blood show, where you have a handful of manufacturers that also show blood mobiles. And a director from a blood bank in Northern California approached me and he said, I'm having difficulty buying a vehicle with a diesel engine. He said, the air quality standards in California are getting so tight, I need to figure out something else. He said, can you do anything in any alternative fuels? And I said, well, we've looked into LP, we've looked into CNG, and I said, we've looked into electric. And he said, tell me more about electric. And it was at that point, that would have been October of 2016, is like, I found my project. So we started moving forward on that, trying to figure out the details of how we put this project together. And we looked at a number of different companies who provide electric powertrains, provide electric chassis. We talked to a lot of major manufacturers of electric vehicles to figure out, you know, how do we address this? And we came back to Motive, and they were just a fantastic little company that started in 2009 in the Bay Area. Great company to work with, great track record of how they do their business. And then we moved forward into the process of actually putting this project together and creating the vehicle that we did. And we did our product launch May 1st of last year at the Advanced Clean Technology Show conference in Long Beach, which is basically an electric vehicle conference.
Yeah. What are the companies that are focused on making electric chassis? Like, we've all heard of like Tesla and those because they're huge. But as far as a company like Motive, like, they're making a big electric chassis. Are they hoping to eventually find customers like Winnebago? Like, how are they making money right now if there's not a bunch of big electric vehicles out
there? Yeah, so Motive's claim to fame in the electric vehicle space is that they are providing an electric powertrain. They're not trying to sell anybody a chassis. They're not trying to sell somebody a completed vehicle. They're selling them a package of basically a conversion package, but it's a really, really good conversion package. So what Motive actually produces are the controllers, the back bone of the electrical system, and then the batteries are provided by a third party. So we're taking the all the internal combustion components out of the chassis, and it's an F53 gas Ford chassis that we're using. It's fully QVM certified, the process that we're doing for removing that, putting the electric conversion in it, and then it goes through our normal processes through the plant.
And the one that you guys released, what is it being used for right now?
Yeah, so the one that's in the video, that was our first vehicle. That was our demo vehicle. That just got delivered to a second stage upfitter, and that's going to become a mobile surgical instrument lab for UCLA. So their use case is there's two hospitals on the UCLA campus. They're about 7 miles apart. This vehicle only needs to move 7 miles a day. So it'll go forward and backward, you know, basically from charging station to charging station at the hospital. They'll go in, they'll collect all the surgical instruments from the surgical suites, recondition them, put them back in the surgical suites, pick up and move to the next hospital. So a perfect use case. They're not moving very far and they're always plugged into power.
Is the weight, how does the weight for what they're using for equate to like what people would need to live in one? Like, as far as like shelving and things like that, I mean, just what would go, you know, dump like tanks and things.
Let's see. So if we were to compare this to, let me back up. So the incremental weight gain of electrification is about 1,500 pounds. So you're losing about 1,500 pounds of capacity versus internal combustion engine. So if we were to take one of our electrics and convert it into an actual RV, we'd have to minimize, you know, some of the carrying capacity of it.
And what is the range on that one?
So our advertised range is 85 to 125 miles. And we've got a gap in there just to allow for whatever you might be powering up on the inside. If it's going to, you know, Arizona, Southern California, where it's really hot, you know, we might need three air conditioners. If it's going to Northern California or maybe, you know, Seattle, something like that, maybe they only need two air conditioners. So there's a little bit of varying because all that power still comes from the chassis batteries for the traction batteries.
Yeah. When you guys have conversations around like actually creating an all-electric rig for consumers, like how do those conversations go?
I think everybody at Winnebago, most everybody at Winnebago, and I think most everybody in the industry would agree that eventually at some point we're going to have an electric RV. The technology of the batteries keeps getting better every year. The price of that technology keeps coming down, and the infrastructure keeps getting built out. So we keep a close eye on what the commercial trucking industry is doing. So in a month, Nikola Motors is going to have their big unveiling in Phoenix, which they're building a competitive semi product, Class 8 truck to the Tesla. And they're talking about a big infrastructure to go along with that. So as that infrastructure gets built out coast to coast and in certain corridors, there's going to be the opportunity for charging at different locations than we would not normally think about. And then if we can get that into campgrounds, you know, it'll just be one of those things that slowly migrates its way into the infrastructure of what we see on the RV side. And then couple that with the increase in technology and our abilities for the vehicle, it just comes together and we're off and running.
Yeah, just because I don't know anything about electric RVs or much about, I don't have an electric vehicle. Would the pedestals be very different for charging electric RVs versus like what's existing in campgrounds? Would they be powered off the same?
So what's existing in campgrounds, obviously we're used to 50 amp service or 30 amp service. It is completely possible to tie into that 50 amp service with a charging station. So it'd be a little portable charging station. We use the same charging connector as what you would find on a Nissan Leaf or a Chevy Volt. Bless you. So the J1772 connection, yeah, we're using that same connection. So if you can find a charging station that you can get your RV to, it could be used, or you could carry a portable charger that would plug in.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Would you mind us doing a little Q&A around all electric? Does anybody have it? Yeah, okay, quite a bit. All right.
Would it be possible to do a hybrid version of that, like the cars do, where it runs a certain amount of time on electric and then the gas engine kicks in and takes you another certain amount of distance?
I will answer that as absolutely, and stay tuned.
Are you looking at smaller versions? I mean, the one in the video is a very large RV. I was wondering if you have any plans for something smaller, like your smaller lines of Winnebagos.
Yes, we do. Yeah, and that's a good question. So when we think about electrifying a vehicle, one of the biggest things that we have to take into account is gross vehicle weight. And with these Class A's that we did, we've got the availability to go up to 26,000 pounds of gross vehicle weight. So we've got plenty of capacity to add that extra poundage of batteries. Where we run into problems is the battery technology isn't quite there to our satisfaction for a B van or like a C body, just for the simple fact that we're restricted on gross vehicle weight. And we start adding the batteries to those, and we would quickly run out of usable carrying capacity to sacrifice for range. Yeah, but it will come.
And out of curiosity, Marcy, because I watched your video, what are you working on right now? Like, what's your big dream project?
Well, we very much want to go to an all-electric drivetrain plus living space. Like, that's something we want to do, and we're looking at all the different options, whether it's a truck plus a trailer or an RV and what's out there right now. And Germany's got a few interesting little things, and then I saw yours, and I was like, that's really cool that Winnebago's thinking along these lines, because that's something that may be, make it feasible for more people to do this. But obviously, there's limitations on the range right now. And like you said, the size. So we're wanting to maybe jump in early and start testing things, some things out, driving across the country with an all-electric living space and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's not a matter of if, it's when. Yeah.
So I thought I saw in the video a thing pop up that said subsidies available.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about what they are or what they're anticipated to be?
Yep. So when we talk about the subsidies that are available, we're specifically talking about commercial applications. There is the federal incentive for $7,500. It's still available. I believe that got extended, so it's good for another year. But on the commercial side, we're obviously watching California very closely because of their air quality regulations. They've got a lot of money that's available for commercial applications, primarily in transportation, so transit buses, things like that. But we're able to get some traction through the state of California because we're different. It's something that they've never seen before. They didn't really realize that we had bookmobiles, bloodmobiles, mobile dentist units, ophthalmology units running around California. So then when we start talking about electrifying those and turning those into suitable applications, they're like, that's a great idea. I can help you find some money for that. So in California, you automatically qualify for a $100,000 incentive through the state. And then at the different air quality management districts around the state, there's additional funding that's available for some of these commercial opportunities. So you can get, you know, up to $200,000 in some areas, depending on what geographical location. And then you also factor in the VW settlement money that's being distributed right now. So the everybody remembers the VW emission scandal and all the money that they had to pay, the $2 billion and then the $2.8 billion on top of that. Anyhow, that's getting to the state level now and being dispersed, but it's at the state level. So each state is deciding on their own how they're going to spend that money. So we did have a successful application in Colorado recently where they received $200,000 from the state of Colorado through their VW settlement money to fund a mobile preschool that we're going to be doing for a company out in Colorado.
So can any company right now come and buy this all-electric unit from you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're in production. So
how much does it cost?
So the incremental cost, if you look at our commercial products, an empty shell, roughly about $100,000 for an empty shell. The incremental cost of electrification for a 6-battery system would be $250,000. Incremental cost for an 8-battery system would be $300,000. So it's not cheap. But
with a $200,000 subsidy, that's pretty darn good.
It helps, yeah. And then when you start looking at the reduction in annual maintenance along with the electric vehicle, because we've taken out so many things that will give you problems and so many things that you have to do preventative maintenance on, you know, we can get that return on investment on an electric vehicle in some cases down to 3 years.
Hey, Jimmy, my name is Scott. So I'm a Pure 3 lithium Travato owner. Thank you. That thing is amazing. I urban camped in St. Augustine, Florida for nearly 6 days.
Awesome.
Connected to nothing. It was incredible. So great job on that. My question is on where are you seeing the most innovation originating? Is it the technology? Is it voice to customer? Is it kind of moonshot projects? And of those, which are you most excited about?
So from my perspective, most of our innovation comes through technology and figuring out what technology is out there, how do we leverage that into existing products, and try and avoid moonshots, or if we're going to do a moonshot, we've got a target in mind. On the voice of customer side, through the specialty vehicle division, when we start talking about our accessible vehicles, we're heavy into customer feedback on that. So we definitely that plays into a huge role into our accessible coaches. On our specialty vehicle side, yeah, it's definitely more of a technology-based innovation. Yeah, did I answer your question? Okay, good.
I think we have time for maybe like one more question. Someone over here.
Just returned from a couple months of boondocking in the desert, living totally off solar.
Nice.
What's the solar challenge for charging this amount of battery edge for driving and a long range?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a big challenge. So just to do some quick math for you, our 6-battery system would be 120 kilowatt hours. We've done an application where we've installed a full solar roof on a 38-foot Class A, and we're able to generate about 3,200 watts continuous.
but only for a handful of hours during the day. You start getting into angle of the sun, you know, you start getting into, you know, all those factors that play into solar. And the fact that solar, I mean, even in a laboratory condition, solar is only about 24% efficient. You know, average panels are somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 23, I would say. So solar's got a little bit of catching up to do. I mean, the solar industry's been around for a long, long time, and they haven't made, you know, substantial gains, but they incrementally about 1% to 1.5% gain in efficiency every year. So I would say within about the next, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years, solar might become a better option. Or if you look at it from the other aspect, charging abilities of batteries or charging different chemistries of batteries might be a little bit more suited towards solar applications. But what we're seeing on the electric vehicle side is the solar is more of a viable option for powering the environmentals or the ancillary devices inside the vehicle. So if we can generate 3,200 watts of power, we could run air conditioners during the day for commercial applications that are out working during the day. To put substantial power back into the traction batteries, it's a tough use case right now.
Awesome. Jamie, thank you so much for coming out, man.
My pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning into that episode. If you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to heathandalyssa.com and click on podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening to the RV Entrepreneur, and I'll see y'all next time on the show.